WSBTRadio.com presents a fan's perspective on Notre Dame sports. This is Dome and Domer.
Hey, Irish fans, this is Dome and Domer, an online conversation about Notre Dame sports from a fan's perspective. I'm Mike Sullivan. Joining me is Mike Brammer. We're going to spend about 15 minutes discuss Notre Dame's two big wins in the Big East Conference, pushing the Irish to 6-2 overall and second place in the Big East. We'll also talk about the great hire for Charlie Weiss's football staff. John Tenuta joins the Notre Dame coaching staff for the 2008 season. So we got a lot to talk about. Let's get going. Bram, you were at the game on Saturday night, and that was a huge win for the Irish. And they're all big at this point in the season in conference. Talk to me a little bit about the atmosphere at the Joyce Center with the blackout night.
Well, they handed out black T-shirts to everybody that walked through the turnstiles, and surprisingly, everybody put them on, which is a neat thing. Unfortunately, again, the gold section was about half empty as usual. But other than that, at times the crowd really got into it, and they seemed to have an effect on the game. There was one point where Torrey Jackson was trailing one of the DePaul guards. The entire bench for DePaul was screaming at him to try and warn him, and the crowd was so loud you couldn't hear. Jackson swipes it, goes back down, and scores a bucket.
Yeah, let's talk about the crowd for a little bit. I mean, on the one, it's 33 games in a row. Obviously, we've got a clear home court advantage. But this is only, maybe like the third sellout during that streak. Saturday was the first sellout of the year. You know, that's amazing to me. The women's team, no knock on the women's team. Muffet's got a great program. But the women's team has sold out more this year than the men's team has. And that's just an unbelievable situation. What's your take on that?
I think it's similar to the problem we got in football. You've got a bunch of older people that have had season tickets for a really, really long time. And that type of fan is not going to get up and scream at the top of their lungs.
They're not even showing up. That's half the problem.
Yeah, that's half the problem. And, you know, any kind of bad weather whatsoever, nobody shows up. However, I will say that recently that started to change a little bit. You're getting people that are a little bit more enthusiastic. Now, it's not the whole crowd, but it's enough to where it's making a difference. And the students are now involved in it a lot more than they normally
are. And there's more student tickets sold this year than in the past couple of years. So that's terrific. But I tell you, one of the things that everybody's frustrated. True Notre Dame fans, passionate Notre Dame basketball fans, are frustrated by the lack of turnout, particularly in the gold seats. And sometimes the crowd is a little dead until the students get it going. And I think you're right. It's people have had those tickets for 40 years when the Joyce Center opened, and maybe when they had those tickets they were 35, but now they're considerably older, and the spirit level is a little off. I'm looking forward to the renovated Joyce Center. It's going to be about 1,500, 2,000 seats less in capacity, making tickets at a premium, and I hope they get the students down closer to the court and maybe around the court. I think we'll have to wait and see how those decisions all play out, but I think the renovated Joyce Center will just add to the home court advantage.
Yeah, it should. I would like to see Notre Dame put the students around the court. They're doing that a lot in a lot of places. I know Michigan now does it. It clearly is an advantage, and we need to do that.
Okay, let's talk about the game a little bit. Obviously, I mean, when you're looking at the performance against DePaul and Providence this past week, the conversation has to start with Luke Herangode. I mean, he's the Big East player of the year at this point in the season. I think everybody would recognize that. He is amazing in that he's a smaller post player, but has a knack for getting the ball in the bucket and has an unbelievable variety of low post moves and ways to score.
Yeah, he does. And the nice thing is, one of the things that we did in the DePaul game, which was real good, is he got a touch almost every single time down the floor. Now, what that did is that enabled him to realize, all right, so I got one guy on me, or if I feel the pressure coming over, he'd kick it out. And that got us a lot of open looks. Now, we didn't shoot all that well, but he hit the boards hard. He had 10 offensive rebounds himself. But the guy is something. He's a way to generate offense. As long as we get him touches, he clearly has a huge impact.
Yeah, and it's not just the different ways he has of scoring. He can face the basket, hit that mid-range jumper. He's almost impossible to guard when he makes those spin moves and so forth. But what I love about him is, as the ball gets thrown into him in the post, the offense doesn't stand and watch. Sometimes with Taryn Francis, for an example, ball went into him and everybody stands and watches, right? And Taryn would take forever to figure out what to do with it. Herangode, we continue to cut, and he's a great passer for a big guy. He's got great vision and awareness, and he knows how to pass, when the ball comes into him and he doesn't have his shot, he gets it out to one of the shooters or to somebody cutting to the basket.
He does. I mean, he does a great job of that. And I think that he's got that sense to where he knows how he can separate himself from a guy that's guarding him. Now, really, the only trouble he's had the entire year is when we played UConn. And we went against that 7-footer, and he struggled a little bit. But even then, he still was enough of a force in that game to cause problems for them, open up some shots for us, and we did hit it pretty well from outside.
Yeah, I agree. You know, the big 7-footers for UConn and Georgetown have given him a little trouble. Well, you know, not a big surprise there. He's only 6'8", so I'll take my chances with our big guy most nights. But other guys clearly that are huge for this team right now. Kyle McElarney continues to do what we need him to do, score points. But he's not just a spot-up jump shooter. He can score taking the ball to the hole. Reminds me of Chris Quinn a little bit in his development by the time he was a senior, how Quinn could create off the dribble, hit that little floater. Heron Godey's got some of the same moves.
McElarney in the DePaul game, he actually didn't pass up a lot of open looks that he had. I know that he was catching a little bit of heat from Bray on that. And clearly in this game, every single time he had an opportunity to shoot, he did. Now, he started out 0-for-4, but then he started heating it up. But he also drove, and he's able to, like you mentioned, as Quinn was, one-on-one, he can separate himself. He's very quick. He's really deceiving with the basketball, and he did a really, really nice job of finding open looks for himself and creating some offense. And that frees up Heron Godey. I mean, guys look for McElarney drive, they come off, and all of a sudden now we got Heron Godey one-on-one.
Well, what makes this team so tough to defend is that third scoring threat. Right, it's going to be Heron Godey, McElarney, and then a lot of guys can be that third threat. It can be Ayers, who has seen his role on the bench. In his role on the bench, he's really thrived, I think, over the last three games. It can be now Hillsland, who's starting to find his scoring touch a little bit. Certainly, Rob Curtis is Mr. Consistent. And Torrey Jackson's capable of putting up some points, as we saw a 14-point effort out of him. So that third option, this is where I think makes Notre Dame so tough to defend, is we got a lot of guys who can be that third threat.
Yeah, we do. And not only that, but it's key that guys like Jackson and Hillsland, if these guys are putting in 10 points a game, that makes Notre Dame extremely difficult to guard. And I really think what I've seen so far this year is when we do go eight deep, we got guys that are giving us some production. I mean, Zellers came in and was 2-for-5 from three, and one of his was in and out. I mean, it just barely came out of the box. He would have been 3-for-5 if he hits that. But the point is, he gets an open look and he drains it. I mean, 2 out of 5 from 3-point range, that's 6 points. That's 5 shots.
Hey, that's good math too, Bram. I noticed you did that without even really counting. So I'm very proud of you for that. But you're getting good minutes out of Jonathan Peoples as well. A lot of people, you know, complain that Bray doesn't use his bench enough, and that the starters are going to get tired legs down the stretch. You know, I don't know. He's a guy that is in crunch time going to use about a 6-man rotation. That's who he is consistently. He's done that. So I don't know if I guess we'll see how that plays out this year. But I like how we're getting the bench involved early in the game, and we're getting production. Everybody seems to know their role, and they're productive in that role. So looking ahead now, we're 6-2 in the Big East, second place. Big one against Seton Hall on the road. You got to continue that momentum because Marquette looms on the horizon.
Yeah, they do. We got 10 games left. Right now we're 6-2. If you figure we go 6-4, I mean, that's 12 wins. That's an absolute lock for us to get in, regardless of what we do in the tournament.
Well, I think it means buying the Big East tournament, first round of the Big East, and that's huge.
Exactly, and I think that if we can accomplish that, and I think that is doable. Now, we do have some tough games coming up here, so it's not like it gets easier for the Irish. February is always a difficult month for us, but I do think that the way this team is gelling right now, I would be very surprised if we don't pull off 6-4.
Well, I agree with you. Looking back here, this is kind of struck me that I noticed this. In the last 2 years, the last 24 months, almost 2 years exactly, we are 22-9 in the last 2 years in the Big East. From the point at which we were 1-8 2 years ago, Quinn's senior year, and we had all those heartbreaking losses, from that point on, that was the low water mark. I think everybody can agree on that. And since that time, in the last 24 months. We are 22-9 in Big East games. That's a phenomenal accomplishment.
It really is, and that's against a pretty difficult schedule. That's not like we got a bunch of cupcakes thrown our way in the Big East. I mean,
well, there's no place to hide in the Big East.
You're going
to play great teams.
But every now and then you get lucky with maybe playing somebody once and then getting them at home. And the fact of the matter is we've had some difficult games at home in this 33-game stretch. So clearly, I mean, when you do that in the Big East, I mean, there's not many teams that do that.
Absolutely. Okay, let's flip it around here to football and some great news for Irish fans in the recruiting season. But this isn't a recruit that's going to play for us for 4 years. This is a different kind of recruit. Charlie Weiss landed the addition of John Tenuta to the football staff, former defensive coordinator at Georgia Tech. I'm sure everybody's read about his credentials at this point. But let's talk a little bit about the implication of this addition to the football staff and what it's going to mean going forward on both sides of the ball.
Well, it is. It's somewhat surprising if you really think about it. I mean, here's a guy that probably was in the top five at his position as far as respect in the country. He's had other opportunities to move into a much higher position. He could have gone to Washington as a defensive coordinator. He had another look from one of the other top programs, and he chose to come to Notre Dame to be joined up with a guy the likes of Charlie Weiss, and that says an awful lot, especially after the season we just went through.
Here's what I like about it. I mean, the development of Corlin Brown, who, as a young defensive coordinator, we all think has a lot of potential and promise, and we saw some good things with the defense. Really tough to evaluate him given the talent situation on the field. But Corlin Brown certainly is going to benefit from having a guy like John Tenuta to brainstorm with and to learn from. And I think this makes Corlin Brown that much better of defensive coordinator to be able to draw on that experience of a guy like John Tenuta.
Yeah, Corlin Brown's he's a proven entity in the NFL. I mean, there's no doubt about that.
Well, as a position coach.
As a position coach. But I think, coming here, if you're a proven entity in the NFL, then you know what it means to work hard and to figure it out and get it done. And I think that's the situation he's in right now. He just needs to figure this out. He needs to get comfortable with being a defensive coordinator, and there is no better way to do it than to be around a guy like John Tenuta. I mean, that clearly is going to pay huge dividends for us.
And then on the other side of the ball, the benefits for the offense. If you're Charlie Weiss, to be able to sit down with a guy that has prepared against your defense or your offense the last couple of years and arguably shut it down in 2 years in a row, to be able to say, hey, coach, what did we do? What were our tendencies on offense that you tried to exploit? What were the things that we did that you thought, you had the advantage as a defensive coordinator? How did you approach my offense? I think that interaction between Weiss and Tenuta will be tremendously beneficial for the offense.
Yeah, and it's going to, no doubt about it, it'll play huge dividends. I even like the fact that I think Tenuta should have an impact on the recruiting trails as well. I mean, that's a guy that's been down in the South who goes up against the other teams in the Southeastern Conference and the ACC and recruiting those kind of players. I mean, that should bode well for us as well.
Yeah, some of the things you read on ND Nation or in other sites on the internet indicate that Tenuta wasn't a dynamic recruiter. I mean, I'm just repeating those things that you read. I don't know if he's a great recruiter or not. I guess that remains to be seen. But given Charlie Weiss's emphasis on the importance of recruiting, I bet you if he doesn't, he'll be a good recruiter because that's going to be the expectation here on this staff. Everybody's got to get out and recruit. So I hope that that's one of the things that he does well. But some of the things you read indicate that maybe that's not his strength. Bottom line is, preparing a game defensive game plan and getting defensive personnel to play at a very high level, we know that's his strength. He's a proven commodity in that regard.
Yeah, and there's no doubt about it. He is a huge catch for Notre Dame. Doesn't matter how you evaluate it, this guy is going to have big, big dividends for us.
Okay, now recruiting signing days in a couple days. We'll be back to talk about what should be a top five class for Notre Dame. Hopefully we'll land a couple more guys and finish as the number one recruiting class, but there's still some news to break there. So we'll come back in a few days with an update on that as well as the Notre Dame Seton Hall game on Wednesday night in New Jersey. Until then, you've been listening to Dome and Domer, an online conversation about Notre Dame sports. If you have any questions or comments, send us an email, info@domeanddomer.com, or post them on our website, which is domeanddomer.com. For Mike Brammer, I'm Mike Sullivan. We'll see you next time on Dome and Domer.